It is Thursday, August 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Thai authorities do not believe this week's deadly blast in Bangkok was the work of international terrorists. North and South Korea exchange artillery fire along the border.
It happened about 60 kilometers north of Seoul. It happened reportedly in a somewhat unpopulated area in a mountain.
And we hear about honors for country music stars Carrie Underwood and Trisha Yearwood. It's all ahead. The Thai government is seeking the help of Interpol in hunting down the suspects in this week's deadly Bangkok shrine bombing. A police spokesman says the incident was likely planned by at least 10 people, including some foreigners. The government on Wednesday issued an arrest warrant for and released a sketch of a foreign man they believe carried out the Monday attack on the Erawan Shrine. Police officials say at least two other men, one wearing red and another wearing white in the CCTV video, are also suspects in the attack. I spoke with VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman in Bangkok and asked him why authorities do not believe the bombing was linked to international terrorism.
Well, they're not really elaborating on that, and it is a bit confusing considering that they say their primary suspect, the individual seen in the closed-circuit television footage of apparently leaving the backpack with the presumed bomb inside, has been identified as a foreign man and an arrest warrant issued yesterday for him. And additionally, the national police chief is now saying that they believe that 10 people were involved in this conspiracy to set off the bomb, and that about half of those are foreigners.
Have there been any indications that this might be at all linked to some of the, say, Uyghur movement within China?
That's been pretty well discounted. In fact, the prime minister, the former army chief who carried out the coup in Thailand last year, Prayut Chan-o-cha, has said that it isn't linked to the Uyghurs. And in an announcement today, the military junta came on a national broadcast and said very clearly that this does not appear to be linked to any sort of global terror group, and that the Chinese tourists who were in the shrine when the bomb blew up were not the primary targets.
Is Bangkok returning to normal since the bombing that took place earlier this week?
No, it is not. What we're seeing is enhanced security throughout the city. When you go into some of the mass transit rail stations and into some of the shopping malls, there are people who now want to inspect your bags, and definitely a more increased presence of guards. But we're not seeing a mass presence of police officers and army troops, despite an announcement yesterday that 10,000 soldiers and police would soon be manning checkpoints and roadblocks.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Steve.
Okay, sir.
That's VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman in Bangkok. Well, in other news, North and South Korea exchanged artillery fire along the country's western border, Seoul officials say, in the latest flare-up of cross-border violence. No casualties have so far been reported. I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul. He describes today's events.
Late this afternoon, we got word that North Korea had fired artillery shells into the south. It happened about 60 kilometers north of Seoul. It happened reportedly in a somewhat unpopulated area in a mountainous region near a town. So there are no reported casualties. South Korea responded by firing a round or so, a number of rounds, into the north. There were reports that the shells, the North Korean artillery firing was attempting to target a loudspeaker station in that part of the border region.
Now, this apparently is occurring as the United States and South Korea are conducting military exercises. Are these activities linked at all?
That's where we get into an area of speculation. We don't know. We have no information on what they're linked to. It is true that this week the U.S. and South Korea have started joint military exercises, as they do every year. Also, recently, there was an incident in another part of the border region where South Korea accused North Korea of planting landmines that injured two South Korean soldiers. South Korea responded to that attack by resuming these anti-North Korea propaganda broadcasts at the border. North Korea responded by restarting up their own broadcasts at the border, and that supposedly the South Korean broadcast station or tower was supposedly the target of today's attack. Another speculated reason why this could have happened today was that President Park had announced that she is going to China for the 70th anniversary of World War II. The celebration's happening there.
I did want to ask you about President Park's visit to Beijing. Did she indicate why she had made that decision to attend those ceremonies? Because I believe some world leaders are boycotting that.
No, but there had been a lot of calls for her to within the country to do this, to outreach to China, to maintain these good relations. Under her administration, she has initiated a whole series of visits and improved relations. She signed a free trade agreement with Beijing. The president of China visited South Korea last year, a state visit to Seoul, and that happened before he has traveled to North Korea. So she has made a point of trying to improve relations. Now, I spoke today with a Korea analyst here in Busan University, and he has the explanation for all of this. He seems to think that the reason for this is that she is, in addition to trying, of course, to improve the economic situation here in the country, she is also working to undermine China-North Korea relations by improving her relations with China, by showing China that there's great economic benefit in working with the South, and not have it, rather than having to support the North, by trying to show China that South Korea would not be an adversary if at some point down the road Seoul was able to take over the North in some sort of unification scheme.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Brian, for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
That's VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's the reaction been to this exchange of fire between North and South Korea?
Well, there's a lot of apprehension about what this means, if this is going to escalate. It's still somewhat early, so there's still just a lot of initial reaction, people pushing out articles and trying to get more information. But certainly, as we've been covering on VOAnews.com, there's been some exercises with the U.S. and South Korea, and the North Koreans have not been happy about that, so people are wondering if that could be linked to this, and it seems like it may be. But initial reaction, like I said, a lot of apprehension and confusion, people waiting to see if this escalates and hoping that it won't. Another trending top topic today is the General Certificate of Secondary Education exams, the GCSE exams. These are exams given in the UK. They used to be the old O-level exams,
okay.
And now it's called the GCSE. So that's GCSE is trending, and hashtag results day. Today's the day that kids in the UK and around the world are getting their results in those exams and figuring out where they're going to go next in their academic career based on the results. So,
yeah, best of luck to them.
Yes, best of luck. And it's interesting, a lot of people sharing pictures saying, I did it, and you know, I'm so blessed, everything's great. Other people putting up some funny little memes and things because they didn't do as well. But it's funny because I think social media plays this role where it keeps things kind of light and they can share jokes about these kind of things. So it's kind of this levity. It takes some of the pressure off of them sharing these pictures on social media. sharing success stories and then kind of building people up and saying, it's all right, if you didn't do well, it's, you know, here's a funny picture to make you feel better. And there's a Pew Research report out about Facebook and Twitter. Now, we talked about Facebook and Twitter going back and forth, and they're kind of battling for social media supremacy. And this report from the Pew Research Center says they're both kind of plateauing. People are actually using Pinterest and Instagram more often. So they're saying that that's more popular in the U.S. now. More people are going to those services, Instagram being the photo sharing service. Pinterest is kind of the message board where you can pin on different articles and pictures and things. Interestingly, though, they say Facebook is the most popular social media site. Still, 72% of adults online use Facebook. So a huge number, nearly three quarters. They also point out that apps like WhatsApp, Kick, and Snapchat are growing in popularity. More people using those, about one-fifth to a third of people using those, mostly young people. So as people get older, those probably become more popular as those social media get used more and more.
Yeah, so I guess some of us need to explore those areas as well.
Check it out, for sure.
Right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Did you know that the moon has an atmosphere? Oh, it does, a very thin one. As a matter of fact, it's so thin, most scientists refer to it as an exosphere. By comparison, Earth's atmosphere at sea level is about 100 trillion times denser. Now, NASA confirms what scientists have long believed. The moon's trivial atmosphere contains neon, as discovered by the Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer, or LADEE. Not only did LADEE detect neon, it found a relatively abundant supply of the element at the moon. The NASA spacecraft also found that the moon's exosphere is made up of mostly helium, argon, and neon that came from the solar wind or was the result of radioactive decay of lunar rocks. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, two country music stars are honored. In the Philippines, a year-old law that was aimed at helping the poor with family planning is facing some new challenges. Philippine health service providers are dealing with a recent Supreme Court order curbing some free contraception for the poor in the majority Catholic nation. Simone Orendine has the story from Manila.
The delivery ward at the Philippines' largest public maternity hospital is filled by rows of beds with mothers in hospital gowns. Some women breastfeed while others try to calm crying newborns. At the Joseph Fabella Memorial Hospital in Manila, these women will be out in a day, and counselors have little time to let them know about family planning. Dr. Esmeraldo Ilim heads Comprehensive Family Planning Services at Fabella, which includes options from natural methods of birth control to artificial contraception. He says most of the mothers here are poor and have five children on average. A few say they have opted for some form of contraception after giving birth. Ilim says the new law that provides for free contraceptives to the poor has been a great help.
For the 1 year that the law was passed, we were able to procure a lot of commodities, and they were all distributed to the health centers and made available to the clients needing them.
Ilim says before the 2012 law, government health facilities did not have the money to dispense contraceptives for free, and they relied on donations from other countries. For years, versions of the law were shot down by lawmakers who took the view of the Catholic Church that contraception unnaturally ends life before it can begin. Last year, the Supreme Court struck down eight provisions but left the rest alone, including the arrangements for free contraceptives to the poor. But this June, the court placed a temporary restraining order on government distribution of certain implant contraceptives while it looks into a petition that claims they cause abortions. Ilim says the implant is the most popular form of birth control. The long, thin progesterone capsules are embedded under a woman's skin and prevent pregnancy for 3 years. Earlier this year, Sorsogon Mayor Sally Lee, who calls herself a devout Catholic, declared her city pro-life, using a clause stipulated by the Supreme Court that conscientious objectors are not compelled to dispense artificial contraceptives.
It's all about my conscience. It's all about living in harmony with nature. It's all about God. I don't have any argue with those things. I don't need to argue. It is just my commitment to God, to people, and to myself.
Lee says the city's public health centers promote the Catholic-sanctioned natural family planning and no longer provide free artificial contraception. Fabelia's Dr. Esmeraldo Ilem says while the temporary hold on certain birth control is in place, health officials continue to travel the country to inform residents of all forms of family planning. Simone Orendain for VOA News, Manila.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. It's been a good year for country music stars Carrie Underwood and Trisha Yearwood. They've both been picking up some big honors recently. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA's Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about Yearwood's latest success and how Underwood beat out some of the top names in country music to win her Teen Choice Awards.
Carrie Underwood wasn't there, but she found out that she won two Teen Choice Awards recently. Nikki, Carrie won for
Choice Country Song.
Choice Country Song.
And Choice Country Artist.
And her songs were Something in the Water and Little Toy Guns.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. She actually, she had to beat out some pretty high-profile people
Big
to get
time.
These things.
Yes, for the Choice Country Song, she had to beat out Luke Bryan and Florida Georgia Line and Hunter Hayes, Sam Hunt, and Megan and Liz.
Wow.
Yeah, and in the Choice Country Artist category, she had to defeat, again, Luke Bryan and Florida Georgia Line and Hunter Hayes, but also Miranda Lambert and Blake Shelton.
Wow. Those some pretty high-powered names.
Yes, she beat them all.
Now, she's also known for hosting the CMA Awards with Brad Paisley.
Yes.
And I understand that Carrie has signed up to do that again.
She'll be doing that again. This is like their seventh or eighth year
Something
doing
like
it together.
That. I think it's the eighth year.
Yeah.
And it's going to be broadcast in November.
November 4th.
And she and Brad are kind of the, you know, a comic relief team.
Yes.
In addition to being extremely talented musicians
yes.
and singers.
Yes. And she's working on new music. So who knows if something may be out around that time, she might perform it. She's actually planning on making a huge announcement. So we'll see what that announcement is.
Well, let's go to another very talented woman, Trisha Yearwood.
Trisha Yearwood. Well, she has another thing to add to her list of multiple accomplishments. She won the prestigious ASCAP Voice of Music Award.
Wow.
Yes, so this is a very prestigious award. It's given to songwriters and artists whose music gives voice to the spirit of a generation and who possess a unique style of creative genius that will inspire and enrich generations to come.
Wow. Now, was there any particular song, or was it for her entire body of work?
For her body of work.
Wow. Well, congratulations to Trisha, and I bet her husband, Garth Brooks, is all proud of her.
Well, you know, both her and him, they are getting, they're being inducted to Nashville's Music City Walk of Fame later on this month. So, no, actually, next month. So it's going to be a special ceremony that's happening next month. And they are the first husband and wife team to receive that honor.
Wow. Well, we'll look for that. We might even post some photos of that on our Twitter feed. If you want to send us a tweet, you can send one to Nikki at VOA underscore music. And you can listen for Nikki, Country Hits USA. That's on our website, www.voanews.com.
The music of Trisha Yearwood. Well, that's our show for today. Please look at our website at voanews.com. We have a range of stories, both news and features that might interest you. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States has expanded its offer of rewards for information on key leaders of terrorist organizations to include a leader of one of the groups conducting attacks on government facilities and other targets in northern Nigeria, roiling the nation in sectarian violence. Abu Bakr Shekau is the leader of the group commonly known as Boko Haram, a Nigeria-based extremist organization seeking to overthrow the current government there and replace it with a regime based on a strict interpretation of Islamic law. Links with terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab have strengthened Boko Haram's capacity to conduct its attacks. Previously, the group's number two, Shekau claimed overall command in July 2010, expressing solidarity with Al-Qaeda and threatening the United States. A vehicle bomb attack on the United Nations headquarters in Abuja in August 2011 marked the group's first lethal operation against Western interests, killing at least 23 people and injuring 80 others. In April 2012, the group bombed a Nigerian newspaper office in Abuja and later threatened other local and international news outlets, including the Voice of America. Under his leadership, the group has kidnapped hundreds of children to serve as hostages, bearers, and even fighters, most recently in the northeastern town of Damasak. Shekau is tall, slim, and has a dark complexion. He was born in Yobe, Nigeria, sometime between 1965 and 1975, and is of the Kanuri ethnicity. He speaks Arabic, Hausa, Fulani, and Kanuri. He is known to have used the aliases Abu Bakr Sikwa and Imam Abu Bakr Shekau. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $7 million for information leading to Shekau's location. The U.S. promises that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them and their families. If you have information on this man, contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate or submit a tip to www.rewardsforjustice.net. or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. You may also call the Rewards for Justice tip line at 1-800-877-3927.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.